Darrell Ewing was not your average prisoner.
You have such a deep connection with a lot of celebrities in the Detroit area.
All the top and hottest rappers in the city came right from my neighborhood with my friends and my family.
Growing up in the 90s and early 2000s, going to prison was common for many young Black men in Detroit. Public schools in the city were starved of resources. There weren't many prospects for good jobs. So many young men turned to street life or fell victim to it. And a lot of the music coming out of Detroit at the time was about this. A childhood friend of Darrell's is now a famous rapper. He goes by 42 Doug and has a song called It Gets Deeper about the life they grew up in. In the song, he gives a shout out to Darrell, who he calls Apple, saying free app. But unlike many of their other friends who ended up going to prison,
they always believed in your innocence.
They always believed in my innocence. Duluc, Peasy, Vez, all of them have always, Icewear has always championed and kept my name alive. And, you know, as soon as I went to jail, they always rapped about me, kept my stories alive, put me on their album covers, some of everything.
At the 2020 BET Awards, 42 Doug and Lil Baby performed their opening ceremony with matching outfits. They had the names of their friends in prison written in graffiti all over. Darrell's name was on there too.
Oh, that was lit. The whole jail went crazy when they seen him come out with that on him and Lil Baby. They talked about that on the yard for a whole month straight. I got letters from all type of other facilities talking about that.
On the back of their jackets, it said, free them boys.
My name is Darrell Ewing. A lot of people call me Mr. Beat the Odds. I did 14 years, 2 months, and 14 days for a crime I didn't commit.
From Lava for Good, this is Wrongful Conviction with Maggie Freeling. Today, Darrell Ewing. Darrell Ewing was born in Detroit, Michigan, November 18th, 1988. He's the second child of four.
Saeed is the baby, and that's my ride or die. My older sister is Donna Angela Dawson. We call her Pooh. And my middle sister that's right under me is Tiara Dawson. That's my ace. Growing up with all three of them, they was my protectors. but it was love, and I always took care of them and everything. It was actually amazing having three sisters. It taught me to love more. Taught me to be patient, more caring with women.
And among those women was his mom, Lasagna Dodson, a single parent raising three kids.
My mama always provided for us. We didn't need anything. We didn't lack anything, you know. She was a truly amazing woman, a hustler.
Darrell says his mom worked many jobs.
How did she have time to do all that and raise you guys?
My sister or my auntie, Charisse. My auntie Riri would step in. My mom took care of all her sisters because all her sisters was younger than her.
Wow.
So, yeah, she had.
Lasagna Dodson is a saint. Let's just put that on the record.
Yeah, she the rock of the family. She the glue. She the one that holds it all together.
Lasagna remembers one day when she was working at Hertz.
That day was way at the airport. We lived on the east side of Detroit, so that's about 30 miles, right? So I'm like, dang, I ain't got no gas in my car, and I got to go to work tomorrow. Well, Darrell gets his lawnmower. He go cut grass. He come back. He say, Ma, I got about to fill up your car. I got gas money. Fill up your car. And I also bought you a corned beef sandwich and a Pepsi for your lunch. Warmed my heart so much because he's always been caring.
Caring, thoughtful, and intelligent, Lasagna says.
Darrell was so smart as a young man.
That's how he got his nickname, Apple, for his big brain and head.
Because I always had this head, and I always was seen eating apples and everything. And one of my friends started calling me, my people, my family and them all started calling me that.
Lasagna tried to teach her kids about work ethic from a young age.
I gave them money for Christmas to let them buy their own stuff because kids got an unrealistic attitude on how much stuff costs. So I said, you know what? I got $500 to give you. That's all I got. So if you could buy Jordans out of the 500, that's what you do. So I remember him going to the mall and coming back, and he like, well, if I buy the Jordans, they're 170 and I'm only going to have this much left. So he started learning about money and everything. and just always been so intelligent. And then he started coming back and like, hey, man, just take care of the kids. I'm like, you are not the father, young man.
My mama always provided for us. We didn't need anything. We didn't lack anything, you know. She was a truly amazing woman, a hustler. For real, the first hustler that I ever knew. Made me become a hustle boy.
My entrepreneur, he got it all in him. He me times 10.
When I was cutting grass, selling dinners, doing all type of different things to make some money, because I always seen my mama hustling and got 10 different things going on.
He always had that drive. That drive to want something, even as a boy, he did.
When he was a teen, Darrell and his friends started a party promotion crew called the Hustle Boys.
I was like 14, 15, started throwing parties. We used to have everyone, you know, from the city coming to outdoor events. And it used to make a lot of money. I was making money and having fun. It was like a whole new hustle. I loved it.
Were you doing any criminal activity?
No, we weren't doing no crime. At that time, we weren't doing no criminal activity. We were just having fun.
So no drugs, no guns, nothing like that?
Oh, no, I didn't start. I wasn't doing no drugs, none of that.
No.
Nope, I wasn't doing any of that. None of my friends either then at that time wasn't doing drugs or none of that. Because actually, we was all from a good... It was actually a nice, you know, middle-class neighborhood that I was from. My best friends, their daddy was a cop. The other ones, his daddy was a... preacher. Everyone, parents was doing something in the neighborhood.
In fact, the parents helped out.
When it started, it was high school kids and people was bringing their kids out. Kids wanted to get out and parents let them go on the weekend. So they rented little halls and they learned how to do it themselves. So we kind of monitored them and would work the door and make sure they was okay. I would be up there.
Yeah, I started having my mom working the doors and paying her for actually collecting the money for me and everything, you know?
And I watched them make so much money so fast. Social media made it travel fast. Like they had a MySpace back then.
So who were the Knockout Boys? Were they also like a party promotion?
Well, we were supreme in a party promotion, but they tried to do a little something. They had a little parties going, but they used to come to our events. We was really the ones who was a party promoter. They had their little dancing group and they would come to our parties or stuff like that.
Okay, that sounds like a far cry from, like, a violent gang. They had a dancing group.
Far cry.
I'm picturing the dance-off in Step Up, one of the many movies about dance crews that came out around this time.
Because that's what a lot of people used to do back in our time. It wasn't, no, they'd get together in that JIT, you know, Bisco, Tick, all that type of stuff. Hip roll. We was back in our era, it was hip rolling.
That was Darrell's crew in his early teens. Kids partying and hustling.
Detroit always had a history of crews that come together and just get money. They don't have no affiliation, association, no gang signs, none of that that they do, no handshakes, none of that, you know?
Darrell says it was all pretty harmless, but things were about to change.
Once upon a time, Amazon Music met audiobooks and listeners everywhere rejoiced.
Oh, yeah.
Because now they could listen to one audiobook title a month from an enormous library of popular audiobook titles, including romantasy, autobiographies, true crime, and more. Suddenly, listeners didn't mind sitting in traffic or even missing their flight. Amazon Music Unlimited now includes Audible.
No way.
Download the Amazon Music app now to start listening. Terms apply.
Darrell graduated high school early and enrolled in Wayne State.
I didn't qualify for financial aid. And then I had an auntie who I seen had three degrees, and she wasn't doing too good. And she got to stay in school to continue to make sure that she don't have to pay the student loans back.
Darrell says he was making a ton of money with the parties.
So I just said, now is not the time. You know, I ain't going to be buried in debt and ain't going to be like my auntie who ain't using her degrees, you know?
Once he went on ahead and got through with school, it's kind of hard to like tell a kid what they can and cannot do.
So Darrell dropped out of Wayne State and continued the Hustle Boys.
But at that time, we was done with partying. We were just straight selling drugs.
Darrell says the once innocent party crew was now selling pills.
Oxycontins and Percocets, Lortabs, and things to that extent. To be honest with you, I was living the height of my life as far in the streets, and we was making a lot of money. I seen myself still at that time transitioning over to the business. I was using that as a means to get in the proper position to give me some properties and open me up my own club. I was on the path to buy me a bar.
But through street life, Darrell eventually got to hanging out with the wrong people, and soon all his dreams were going to come crashing down. On December 29th, 2009, two cars pulled up to an intersection in East Detroit. A man named J.B. Watson was in a red van with three other passengers. In the other vehicle, a turquoise car, were three men. One of the men got out of the car when stopped and fired multiple shots at the van, killing J.B. Watson and injuring his cousin. Around the same time, about 5 miles away, Darrell Ewing was at a family member's funeral.
Was that something you had heard about?
Of course I heard about the murder. It was all on the news and everything.
And what did you think? Was that just normal? Or?
Well, in the city of Detroit, especially at that time, crime runs rampant. And, you know, when someone get killed, it's like, okay, you know, it's like it's a norm, especially back then.
Detroit had 364 homicides in 2009, according to city data. At the time, the murder rate was actually falling in major cities like Chicago, New York, and LA, but not in Detroit. And the chief of police called it the Wild West.
It's kind of mind-blowing because, like, when you have, like, a Nipsey Hussle or a Prince die, the whole world and the whole neighborhood cries, but when a little girl get killed down the street, nobody says nothing about it. You know what I mean? So that's how numb we is to crime in the city of Detroit, especially back then when murders and stuff occurred, because it was just like a norm.
The victim, J.B. Watson, was a member of the Knockout Boys. Remember, Darrell mentioned they were another party crew like the Hustle Boys. But now, police were looking at this as a gang rivalry, and Darrell's name came up.
Being a hustle boy, I was basically the face. You know how they say Diddy used to run around and parade himself around for Biggie and them? I was the face of Hustle Boys, the one who was always on the mic. Hey, come on out, the one who was always passing flyers. So anytime somebody said something about the Hustle Boys, they always say App and the Twins. So eventually, that's how my name came up.
After the shooting, a witness came forward, Raymond Love, who was at the intersection in his car with his wife at the time of the shooting. Although the incident was only a few seconds, and Love said he ducked down towards his wife, he identified DeRico Searcy as the driver of the turquoise car. He said he could see him through the rearview mirror.
Did you know DeRico Searcy?
Yes, I knew DeRico Searcy. He was an older guy from our neighborhood.
DeRico Searcy was arrested 2 days later. Love also identified Darrell as the man who got out of the car and started shooting. Darrell was brought in for questioning.
When they questioned me, they you know what they told me?
Huh.
He said, I know you didn't do it, but you don't tell me who did it. I'm going to do everything in my power to make sure you go down for it.
And then what did you do?
I said, call my lawyer. And he was like, I promise you, you're going to need him. And ever since then, I thought when they took me back to the cell that it was going to just be a little 72-hour hold and I would be released, but then next morning, it was waking me up, talking about, hey, you're going down to the county. I'm like, what? Yeah, you're getting booked on murder. I'm like, man, this can't be real. They joking, you know? I know Ashton Kutcher and I'm about to jump out to my punk.
But he wasn't being punked. Ashton Kutcher wasn't waiting in the precinct, and Darrell was charged with the murder of J.B. Watson.
When did it all become real that it was happening?
When I was in the courtroom and then people walked in there, Raymond Love and Jendaya Love, and they talking about it was me, that was when it became real. I almost lost my mind. Telling them, look at me, hold on, look at me. Just like, hold on, be quiet. No, they can't be talking about me.
Darrell went to trial almost a year later in October 2010. He and DeRico Searcy were tried together by assistant prosecuting attorney Cam Town. No gun was ever recovered from the crime scene. The only evidence tying Darrell to the crime was the eyewitness testimony of Raymond Love. He testified that inside the turquoise vehicle, he'd seen DeRico Searcy driving and two other men. Love said once at the intersection, Darrell got out of the vehicle with a handgun, approached the van, and started firing at the rear. It's unclear if they tried to find the third man allegedly in the vehicle. Cam Town said this was a gang retaliation, that the Hustle Boys had beef with the Knockout Boys.
Would a beef with the Knockout Boys wind up in a murder, in a shooting?
It wasn't a beef. See, they got this case all twisted. It's only to paint a narrative and help paint their theory to sell it to the jury.
To be clear, federal court records cite some kind of beef going on between the Hustle Boys and the Knockout Boys. However, no one ever testified that Darrell had anything to do with those fights. Darrell also says he had no idea who J.B. Watson was.
Nah, I knew of some KLB members, but I didn't know this guy. I never had an issue with this guy. I never had an issue with none of the KLB members. I never been in the same room with him. When he said his name, I'm like, wow, I don't even know him, you know?
Darrell sat through an entire trial listening to testimony about him being in a gang and beefing with the Knockout Boys.
When you're a Black young man, especially Black people, but Black young men especially, anything they do, dance groups, singing groups, you can end up being a gang.
Darrell's mom, Lasagna, again.
When they stormed the White House, they called them a group. But they call my son a gang. And it's the verbiage that they use when they speak on you. You know?
Lasagna knew her son couldn't have committed this murder. She was with him at the time of the killing and testified in Darrell's defense.
How many people vouched for your alibi?
Man, I could have called 200-300 people inside of there. You know, their own witnesses placed me at the hall. We called six, and I believe five.
They all said Darrell had been at Barden Hall for a gathering following a family member's funeral. He was there the entire time the shooting had taken place. Then a bombshell. A man took the stand saying it really hadn't been Darrell, and he knew who the real shooter was because he, Christopher Richardson, was there.
Christopher Richardson, William Beale, and Tyree Washington.
They had gone on a carjacking spree.
When they all got locked up, they started to tell on each other. And it wound up that William Beale's cousin, Christopher Richardson, said, hey, man, y'all got the wrong people locked up. Darrell Ewan and DeRico Searcy didn't commit that crime. My co-defendants and cousin is actually ones who are responsible, William Beale and Tyree Washington.
Richardson said Tyree Washington had been the shooter. And the thing about Richardson is that he was also a trusted confidential informant for the FBI. He had testified in front of four federal grand juries before. So the FBI trusted him and brought this testimony to assistant prosecuting attorney Cam Towns. They tried to tell her she was getting it wrong. Tyree Washington was even willing to come to trial and testify.
And it turns out that Cam Towns had told him that she didn't need him. And that she wasn't going to use him. And that she had what she wanted. You know, when they locked in on their position, they hate to admit that they screwed up. So they kept pressing the gas. And I guess they wanted to just play out in the courtroom because it's not about guilt or innocence. You know, they just be trying to close a case.
Tyree Washington did not testify at trial. But the FBI agents and Christopher Richardson were allowed to share their testimony, all saying Darrell and DeRico had not been the ones who killed J.B. Watson. By the end of trial, the prosecution's case seemed in shambles. Darrell Ewing had an alibi, there was no physical evidence linking him to the crime, and the jury was aware that someone else had confessed. Darrell was feeling pretty good about the outcome.
We had the federal agents coming to testify, and they bring in their top performer, Christopher Richardson, who was telling on his own cousin. So when you got that, I mean, I'm secure.
During deliberation, the jury was deadlocked. When they returned, instead of ordering a mistrial, the trial judge, Carol Youngblood, responded by ordering them to continue deliberating. When the jury came back, Darrell was convicted of first-degree murder and later sentenced to life in prison without parole. Lasagna was heartbroken.
Oh, God. It was so horrifying. I mean, my body took a whole, like, I went into, my menstrual stopped when they convicted him. Like, literally.
How old were you?
I was 44. And I was so sick. Like, it really, really, really took a hold on us. Like, it was very hard. They almost had to drag us out of the courthouse because we couldn't believe it.
Darrell felt it too, but didn't have much time to wallow. Very soon after trial, another bombshell would drop.
Once upon a time, Amazon Music met audiobooks, and listeners everywhere rejoiced.
Oh, yeah.
Because now they could listen to one audiobook title a month from an enormous library of popular audiobook titles, including Romantasy, Autobiographies, True Crime, and more. Suddenly, listeners didn't mind sitting in traffic or even missing their flight. Amazon Music Unlimited now includes Audible.
No way.
Download the Amazon Music app now to start listening. Terms apply.
As soon as Darrell got to prison, he started trying to prove his innocence.
When you got to prison as, you know, 22 years old, why didn't you just start hustling in there, dealing drugs in there? And maybe you did, you don't have to say so, but you did more than that. You didn't just say, prison is now my life.
You know, when you embrace, you start to hustle in prison and everything, it's certain things that come with that. And it's a certain focus that'll keep you distracted. I know a lot of guys that hustle inside of prison, but they be consumed with that because that's a daily thing that you can have to focus on, you know? And it doesn't give you time to focus on your case. Everybody that I ever knew that ever got out of prison, they were extremely dedicated to nothing but their case. And that's what I was on. So I spent all my time in the law library and reading law books.
Darrell actually learned the law so well, he started practicing law.
Not only do I fight for me, I fight for others. And, you know, I fight for others on behalf of others.
Darrell became a paralegal in prison, helping others file legal documents and fight their cases for free.
Everyone that I have got out recently, I didn't give charge them a dollar and they home now.
Darrell was also trying to get himself home, and he had a lot to work with in terms of trying to prove his innocence. After trial, two specific things happened. Tyree Washington, who the FBI informant pointed to, formally confessed.
He told the Michigan State Police under Mirandarized confession that he was responsible.
Years later, Tyree Washington would also talk to private investigator Scott Lewis, and I got a hold of that recording.
Let me just ask you some questions. We'll get right down to it. I want to ask you about the December 29th, 2009 fatal shooting of J.B. Watson. Are you familiar with that incident?
Yes, I am.
What do you know about it?
Well, I know everything about it. I was there, and I actually was the shooter of that incident, sir.
Okay. Where did this take place?
On Van Dyke and Harper.
The second thing that happened was a juror came forward.
Kathleen Barnes was great. The most amazing woman I ever seen. Came forward and told the truth.
Kathleen Burns said that she was the holdout for a not guilty verdict, but she changed her mind after two jurors came up with extra information. One of the jurors, Karen James, had Googled about gangs and gang hierarchy.
She violated the court orders. The court orders you put when you're a juror every time to not to consider anything outside this courtroom. You go home, don't talk about this even with your husband. Please don't look on anything, social media, any of that about the case.
But Karen James did. She found articles about gangs having a pecking order, and she told the other jurors she believed Darrell was at the top. She surmised that Tyree Washington was at the bottom. So the Hustle Boys sacrificed him. Instead of Darrell, they set up Tyree for the murder.
That wasn't even the prosecutor's theory. Let's make that clear. This is something that the juror summarized in her mind. Karen James, another black woman, hurt me. I'm like, wow.
Another juror, Michelle Chesney, found Darrell's Facebook, and on it, there were photos of him with guns.
One day, it was my man homegirl's birthday, and she came over, and we had a few guns out. And she's like, oh, let's take some pictures with these guns. And we took some pictures with them guns that she put on our social media. And from that, the jury testified, this ain't my words, this was testified on the oath, that they said, hey, if he didn't do this, he did something else just because I had a gun. But that's just because I'm a black man, a black young guy with a gun. Because if you see a Caucasian man with a gun, especially the ones we had, you're going to say he doing hunting. You know what I mean?
All this information made Kathleen Burns change her vote to guilty. Years later, in an evidentiary hearing in 2019, she testified that this trial haunted her, that she kept wondering if she'd done something terribly wrong. Once the jury misconduct came to light, Durrell was able to file post-conviction relief. Meanwhile, out on the streets, Lasagna and Durrell's family were also putting in the work.
We wouldn't stop protesting and making noise and making sure that we did everything we possibly could do to get him out of there.
Man, my family did petitions. My family did protests. My family did town halls. They done some of everything. They even one time we was plotting and strategizing to do a protest in front of Kim Worthy's house.
Kim Worthy is the prosecutor in Wayne County, which covers Detroit. Lasagna says she wasn't going to let the system treat another young black man as disposable.
When you throw somebody away and nobody ever say nothing, out of sight, out of mind, you know, You kind of don't worry. But if you keep seeing us on social media, you're seeing us on the news, that's different. We knew he didn't do it. So when we knew he didn't do it, there's no way the love that we have for him and the love that we have as a family, this is what I think people's supposed to do. You know, I didn't see it no other way until a young man told me that he was locked up for 8 years and it took his mother 2 years to send him some pictures. He said, you don't even know what you did. He said, my mom took 2 years just to send me a couple of pictures. And I kept asking for him and it took her 2 years to get them to me.
But Lasagna wasn't that mom. She stuck with Durrell. And in true hustler fashion, she even started a transportation business.
Man, I've been doing everything. Like we started a transportation company when Durrell was in prison. He started calling me to about my such grandma want to ride with you. Such want to ride with you. I'm like, shoot, we finna start a transportation company and get a vans and come up there. So then he would do work that in the inside and we'd come up there and pick up people. And we called it State Connected Transportation. So really, we just made the best out of a bad situation.
That support meant everything to Durrell.
It kept me fighting. You know, it fueled me. When you know you got a support system, I got to be strong for them and they strong for me. It was a battery in my back.
One of those times was in 2013. The Court of Appeals upheld his conviction, saying the jury misconduct was, quote, harmless error. But since then, multiple federal and state judges ordered a new trial for Durrell and DiRico, finding that their constitutional right to a fair trial was indeed violated by juror misconduct. In 2017, a judge struck down the murder conviction and ordered release or a new trial within 90 days. But despite the order, Durrell stayed in prison. And then the pandemic hit. When I first spoke to Durrell in 2020, he had actually just recovered from the illness.
How long were you sick for?
I was sick for about 33 days.
Oh my gosh.
And then I couldn't smell or taste even after that. And still to this moment, I still got like phlegm to be in my system and my lungs. I'd be trying to go out and run and work out and keep myself agile, but it's just all type of aspects of this COVID thing. And in Michigan, they has yet to release any prisoners.
Lakeland was one of the worst prisons in Michigan, where at least 24 prisoners died from COVID. But Durrell would eventually get a break. After years of fighting, he got a retrial date set for March 2024. On December 1st, 2023, 35-year-old Durrell Ewing went in front of Judge Kiefer Cox for a motions hearing. Durrell stood in the courtroom in his green jailhouse uniform, representing himself with some help from outside counsel. And Durrell went for it, even criticizing the judge for having just come out of a job at the Wayne County Prosecutor's Office.
But the thing is, Your Honor, the thing is, and respectfully, I just learned that you just came out the prosecutor's office a couple months ago, and that you're friends with Kim Worthy, and that you're friends with John Wachitola. So how are you even sitting on my case? I just learned this, Your Honor. How are you even, that's actual bias. The court ruled on the
press, friends, and family were in the audience.
That you should remove yourself from this case, Your Honor, because you, this is a fact.
Anyone in the crowd? I hear some mumbling. I'm hearing some speaking in the background.
The scariest thing I ever seen. I was just so scared, so nervous. I didn't even know what I was going to do if they wouldn't have got this right. But, you know, as I watched him, like, he did such an awesome job. We almost give him standing ovations and stuff. It was something to see. Like, you had to be there.
As Durrell prepared for his retrial, District Attorney Kim Worthy's office was confronted with several challenges. Not only did they have to account for jury misconduct, they also did not provide Durrell with evidence he'd requested for over a year. And they were short on witnesses.
Because by this time, Raymond Love, he got to be at home somewhere like, hey, man, I don't want nothing to do with that case. This case is everywhere. I done got this innocent man locked up. He done finally came to the realization.
And that was one of their key, that was their key witness.
That's their key witness.
On March 25th, 2024, after considering Durrell's case and the fact that the police and prosecution still had not made their evidence available to Durrell, Judge Cox made a decision.
The judge dismissed the case. This is an egregious due process violation.
So for all the reasons placed on the record, the court is going to dismiss the case of Mr. Sears.
Oh, I know the emotional times, but you have to keep it under control. If there's going to be any outburst, take it in the hallway, please.
Durrell's family and friends tried to contain their emotion. But after years of fighting, when the courtroom doors opened, you heard the sound of relief. That day, Durrell walked out of Wayne County Jail a free man.
I just feel like since he came home, I almost have relaxed finally. I used to start at 8 o'clock in the morning. I don't want to do eight in the no more. Like, I'm like, oh God, can we do 10? You know?
Today, Lasagna is surrounded by her entire family and owns her own beauty salon. But a decade ago, she lost her home, her 401k, and the good years of her life advocating for her son's innocence.
It was a lot. It's a lot to go through, but, you know, I tell him all the time, only the strong survive.
And Durrell takes none of it for granted.
I was one of the blessed ones. There's a lot of people in prison that need help and don't have loved ones to support them. But the difference is when you do time for a crime, then not only you know you didn't do, your family know you didn't do, they're always going to be behind you 100%, you know?
So what's next?
Well, right now, I'm working to put into the appeal that they just filed.
DA Kim Worthy is appealing Judge Cox's decision. If she wins, Durrell will have to go to trial. But he says he's not worried. He thinks the evidence in her case is too weak. And on the flip side,
if Kim Worthy loses the appeal, it's over. And I'm going to sue the shit out of her ass.
Does Kim Worthy have the power to not fight this? Does she have the power to say it's over?
Of course she do. She can decide at this moment is enough. We're going to dismiss the appeal and let this be back on. But at the end of the day, they thinking dollars now over justice. Now they got 40 people that just got exonerated.
One wrongfully convicted man was recently awarded $10 million in damages.
You know, they thinking money now and bankruptcy.
Durrell says he wants people to understand that public officials like DA Kim Worthy are elected.
We as a people only get involved in elections and the voting process when it's a national thing. We're in a frenzy about Donald Trump. But we don't deal with the real people that directly affect us locally. be intentional on who you vote for and puts in not only a seat of power in a presidential election, but your local prosecutor and judges seats, because we be crying about injustice, but we put these judges in there who don't give a damn about the law.
Since he's been out, Darrell re-enrolled in Wayne State with a full scholarship to study law.
Man, when he his first day down in law school, we all followed him down there. I said, we gonna get him kicked out on his first day. We taking pictures. We got camera crews with us. We like so excited about everything that he do. Like the whole family is excited. And that's a beautiful thing. Because this is like our moment, our happy time that we waited on, that we didn't see. We was in the dark, and now it's just light, and we just happy. We want to see everything evolve.
And she says she is always grateful to the woman who had the courage to come forward and make this all possible.
Kathleen Burns had a heart to speak up. And a couple of times when she spoke, she said, I just hope he makes his mother as proud as she thinks he is. And I'm like, oh, he is. And every time he doing something out here today, I just be like, I hope she watching him.
Not only is Darrell in law school, but he's working in the community doing outreach.
I work hand in hand with our mayor and police chief out here intervening in community violence, keeping the crime rate down. Daily, we in schools. We go in there and we do mentoring. We working with the alternative school right now, real heavy. These are the most at risk and troublemaking kids, you know, but when we get in there, all they need is love and attention, you know? Some of these parents are struggling, don't have no job, on welfare, struggling to make it. Some of them kids don't have no food. We got to turn around and get them money to go home and get their mother and them fill their refrigerators up, you know? Just being there any way we can. Offering them resources. That's what I spend my time doing. Buying in school, working on a case.
He also spends time catching up with the family that was there for him for nearly 15 years.
We just love just getting together. I could just have him here at the house, like seeing him with my grandkids now, and just they love him to death. We love him. Like, we loved him. And he loved us.
Do you hope that Darrell gives you some?
Man, I'm waiting on my little grandson coming. Look, I just keep seeing grandson, but I'll take a granddaughter too.
But Darrell says he's got time. First, more hustle.
You know, I got a book coming out, The Real Stuff of the Most, and I'm working on my documentary. Be on the lookout for it. I got work.
That's what I wanted to ask you about, the book. I have a copy that you sent me years ago. Is there more to it now?
Oh, I done revised and re-edited. I'm going to send it to you.
Well, when you're super famous, I now have an original manuscript.
Yeah, you got the original manuscript.
That's Darrell. The whole time I've known him, always on the move and a ray of light, even in his darkest times. Thank you for listening to Wrongful Conviction with Maggie Freeling. Please support your local innocence organizations and go to the links on our website to see how you can help. Thank you to attorney Adam Clements at Perkins Law Group for helping with legal review. And thank you to the reporting of Diane Bukowski for Voice of Detroit. We relied on it while researching this episode. This episode was written by me, Maggie Freeling, with story editing and sound design by senior producer Rebecca Ibarra. Our producer is Kathleen Fink. Our mixer is Josh Allen, with research by Allison Levy and additional production help by Jeff Clyburn. Executive producers are Jason Flom, Jeff Kempler, and Kevin Wordis. The music is by three-time Oscar-nominated composer Jay Ralph. Make sure to follow us on all social media platforms at Lava for Good and at Wrongful Conviction. You can also follow me on all platforms at Maggie Freeling. Wrongful Conviction with Maggie Freeling is a production of Lava for Good podcast in association with Signal Company Number 1. We have worked hard to ensure that all facts reported in this show are accurate. The views and opinions expressed by the individuals featured in this show are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of Lava for Good.